Oh, hello everyone. Thanks again for downloading this next episode. I'm delighted today to have on the podcast the CEO of a new quantum startup called StrangeWorks. It's headed up by a man that many of you may know, William Hurley, commonly referred to as Whirly, across the internet. But any regards, Whirly, thanks for joining me today.
Simon, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here. We listen to the podcast. We think this is one of the best, if not the best podcast on the subject. And so we're a little excited, a little intimidated to talk about it since we're a bunch of software guys in this realm of physics.
Well, I hope so. To my knowledge, we're the only podcast that deals with this topic, so I would hope we're the best, considering that there's nobody else out there. But yeah, so thanks for spending the time over there in sunny Texas. But I suppose, especially for you, considering, as you said before we started the podcast, you're not a physicist. You don't come from sort of the traditional route of a lot of these CEOs and a lot of these startups, sort of emerging out of an academic group or sort of more traditional research path. I'd like to first get a bit of a flavor as to sort of where you come from. How the hell did you get into this?
Well, that's a great question. So, my background is primarily software development, systems theory, and systems management. And the way I got into quantum was pretty simple. I mean, I started my career at Apple in the early 90s. I ended up in Apple R&D. I left there in the 97 for IBM because the cultures were obviously identical. And it was a little bit of culture shock. But I've done a bunch of enterprise software and I've done a bunch of startups. And the common thread of that has been figuring out the system models and the theories of how the software works and how it actually delivers value, et cetera, et cetera. And I always, as an entrepreneur, like to know what my next two or three startups are years and years in advance. And so when I did Honest Dollar, which was my last startup, I already had designs on going into one of three spaces: biohacking, robotics, or quantum computing. And I had found myself spending over the last 3 to 5 years more and more time watching quantum from afar, reading all of the papers on it, doing these things. And when it came time for me to leave Goldman Sachs, who had acquired Honest Dollar, I had to make a decision on, what path do I want to take. And I felt that, entrepreneurially, the timing was right with quantum. Personal interest-wise, I am a huge physics fan. I'm a huge science geek, so I love that aspect. And I just felt like that was the right way to go. So before I left, I started volunteering at a couple organizations, trying to build a couple open source projects, helping out some people with some open source projects to start to dip my toes in it and make sure that I'd be able to come into it. Because I think for a lot of people, this topic can be very intimidating.
So, I mean, you said you spent some time reading and you sort of followed the industry over the last couple of years. Considering that you had other options or at least other ideas for your next startup, I mean, what sort of, what tipped the balance? What made you think that, this otherwise heavy academic project is ready for this kind of private sector investment and to emerge into the startup culture?
So that is a great question, and that's a question I get asked a fair amount. And the simple answer is that I do a lot of research on all of these areas. And if you look back to 2014, you see an uptick in the investment from, not just across the world, but the European Union, the United States, China, Germany, Britain, and Canada, especially, right? And there's a bunch of other companies, right? Obviously, Australia and Switzerland, Japan, Singapore, France, etc. But you see this uptick. And then if you look also at patents filed globally, at the number of patents done, around 2012, you're looking at sub 100. Around 2014, at the end, you break 100 and you shoot up over 3 years to over 400 patents. And then, if you look at across patent families, you see patents around qubits, patent around hardware, patents around applications, all uptick. So, you've got this uptick in investment around 2014 to 2017. You've got this uptick in the number of patents, and you also have an uptick in the number of startups that come into the space, right? You had companies like D-Wave that have been around a long time, and OneQubit had been around a lot before that. But around that same time, you start to see a lot of startups coming up in the space, Then you, of course, look at things like Google Zeitgeist and the mentions of quantum and how many articles are being written, et cetera, et cetera. You could kind of see that it felt like the timing was right. You know, my big fear was if you did the same thing with AI, you would have said, you know, you'd have been wrong twice. There were two AI winters because the hype cycles got really huge. But when you look at the investment and the patents alongside the hype, and then you look at what universities are doing, you start seeing a lot more cohesive, a lot more solid picture of an industry that I think is primed to take off.
So in your particular case with StrangeWorks, I mean, StrangeWorks is a software outfit, right? You don't do hardware.
That's correct.
So exactly what kind of software are you looking at? I mean, there's certainly quite a few software startups. Some of the earliest ones, you mentioned one, Qubit, were certainly aligned with D-Wave at the time and now doing other things in sort of financial analysis. But what's StrangeWorks focus?
Well, we think, you know, so first of all, it's a really small community, and we kind of have become friends with everybody in it. We love them. I just have to give a quick shout out to OneQubit guys, because they showed up to South By to our keynote and our announcement, and they're so Canadian, we could not love Andrew Lennon more. Andrew's literally like, oh, you're going to be a competitor, eh? You know, it's like, they are great. But you're right, you know, we're closely aligned with D-Wave and the annealing side. They're now doing some amazing work with Fujitsu on the digital annealer that they have, and a lot of stuff in finance and pharma. The concept that we had when we set out was a little different, and that is there are millions and millions, tens of millions of developers, and for quantum to really take off, someone has to bridge between the physics and the hard science, and even, you know, Rigetti, Wilsing has done a great job with, you know, PyQuil and Forest and all of that. But there's still a huge gap between that and the software developer sitting at a desk in an enterprise, right? I mean, I think people often underestimate that. And so having a lot of experience at BMC and Tivoli and Oracle and places like that, the team and I decided that where we could best help the industry was to create, one, a lot of community work that we felt wasn't being done enough in the developer segment, and then two, a software platform that would allow enterprise to kind of dip their toe in. And so, you know, we wanted to create software that would run on Rigetti and IBM and D-Wave and Fujitsu and whoever, so that there was a lower barrier to entry. Because if you look at the cost of getting into some of these programs, you know, yes, you can put stuff on the Rigetti machine for free, yes, you can put stuff on the IBM machine for free, but you start looking at it when you're an enterprise, it gets very expensive, and nobody was answering fundamental enterprise questions. You know, I heard early on two people very high up at two of our software startup friends who said, you know, the biggest problem with the enterprise is the CIO. And to me, that was like saying, you know, the biggest problem with my relationship is my significant other. I mean, if they were out of the way, it would be great. And it's like, well, you know, the CIO wants to know, sure, the machine's 100,000 times as fast, but it costs a million times as much. I don't care, right? I mean, there has to be a balance of all these other factors. And we also felt like one of the problems that the industry was facing is that people have a dream, you know, startups. We look, and I've done this, we've all done this, and to not admit it is to be lying to yourself. We've all gotten high on kind of that startup crack of, you know what, we're going to go, we're going to change it, we're going to go in the enterprise, and they're going to buy our stuff and give us lots of money, and they're going to deploy it, and everything's going to be great. It's like, well, yeah, but if you're in finance, there's a lot of compliance and regulatory issues with deploying software. There's a long ramp. I mean, when I was at Tivoli, there were cases where we deploy software. They bought it this year. Maybe if it was deployed next year, that was a huge win. And so I didn't think anybody was really focused on the enterprise enough. And I feel like the enterprise is the next logical step to get enterprise and enterprise software developers and the community of software developers and hackers working with this if we want it to turn into an industry. And we believe, you know, that rising tide floats all boats. So it's like, we're partnering with everybody, doing projects with everybody we can. I mean, you know, hey, if one qubit, you know, Andrew and Landon are better at something than we are, we're going to send somebody their way. You know what I mean? If Wilsing has the best thing, we're going to send them to those guys. I mean, I think that's what needs to happen in the industry. And we've all, you know, everybody on the team has had multiple exits. They're in a great spot personally. And so we're in a great spot to be like, hey, we can kind of be friendly with everybody. We can build communities. And I guess, you know, a testament to that is the work that we did with the Stack Overflow, which is, you know, really taking off. I don't know if you've seen that, but we wanted to build a quantum computing area for people to discuss. And we went to Stack Overflow and we said, we've got a great idea. You do all this stuff with us. And they were like, you guys are nuts. But we've worked a lot in open source. We have a lot of credibility in the dev community. We were able to get them to partner up and co-brand the quantum computing Stack Overflow site. I mean, that has 3,300 plus users in it right now. In 156, 57 days, something like that. But the most important part is 94% of the questions get answered. And so, like, you know, Peter Shor answered a question about Shor's algorithm. I think Stephen Wolfram answered a math question. I'm not sure on that. He said he was answering a math question. Never went to look to see if he did.
Well, you're never too sure exactly what Stephen's doing.
Yeah. That's true. I am his. We can speak no ill of him. Bob Metcalf and Stephen Wolfram are great. The only difference is Bob Metcalf's like my actual father in some world where he hates that I didn't go to college and I hate that he did and I rebel against him or something. But there's a smart people on there is the point. And they're doing really interesting stuff. There's a lot of great questions and people are answering them. And now we're starting to get, you know, questions about, you know, people ask about the significance of Clifford operations, right, and quantum error correction. People are starting to ask about Q-sharp and how you can simulate qubits. People are starting to ask about Forest. So it's expanding. And we think, you know, by March, we're probably looking at, you know, maybe 10,000 people, you know, in that community. And that's significant. And that's great because while our logo is on it, and yes, we work very hard on it. We try to answer. We're trying to get it to 100%. You know, James Wooten, who's on there moderating and just also another amazing person we love in quantum, has been doing like majority work. I think he's like at almost 5,000, you know, points on the site. Right. But, you know, we're working very hard on it. The idea is, yeah, it's sponsored. We want people to know that we started it and we're working with it. The idea is it's a community site. That's why we didn't do it on one of our other web properties. That's why we didn't build it ourselves. We did it at Stack Exchange so that there would be things we didn't control. There would be the opportunity for there to be moderators that don't work with us. They're not consultants. They're not affiliates, so that it could grow on its own, you know? And that kind of attitude is really core to what we're trying to do as a company.
So, I mean, just to clarify a little bit, I mean, do you do any kind of sort of basic level research? I mean, do you do algorithms development from the ground up, or is it really this kind of trying to match up, like whether it's Qiskit, whether it's PyQuil, Q-sharp, whatnot, with sort of a development environment and a sort of a programming infrastructure that's a little bit more friendlier to, you know, the corporate world or the hacking world or whatever?
No, I mean, look, the answer is no. We do not do fundamental research. We have a research partner for physics that we've announced, which is, you know, CERN. We sent 15 students over there this summer. They just started a couple weeks ago. We were there last week. We're going back to CERN week after next. And we're starting a quantum computing kind of education thing there with the physicists that are there. We have a mathematics partner that we haven't announced, you know, that we'll announce at the end of September, that we've been working with to do the same. We're, you know, if you think about the Matrix trilogy, you've got the physicists that are Neo and the people that are the Merovingian and so on and so forth. We're kind of like the train man, right? We're like not so attractive, kind of down in the bottom of the basement. But when it comes to enterprise software and enterprise software platforms, it's like we built this. I mean, we're going on, you know, 25 to 30 years each experience in that area. And we're trying to make the things that all of these amazing people we've met in quantum that are creating more available to all of these enterprises. I mean, we want to drive customers to a Rigetti. We want to drive customers to, you know, a 1-qubit or IBM or whoever. And by the way, we can build this very stable, very attractive startup in doing that, right? We don't need to be the Nobel Prize winning physicist that does the topology at Microsoft or the, you know, the person that comes up with the greatest algorithm for financial trading. I mean, we think that democratizing the technology, getting it to as many hands as possible, is the most valuable. I mean, you know, that's just, you know, we know what we know. and that's enterprise software. And so, you know, do we have physicists on staff? Of course we do. We have to, right? I mean, think of where we're at in the evolution of quantum computing. I mean, it used to be back in the day of computing, you had to be an electrical engineer because you had to understand the flow of electricity between the gates, right? Like physical gates. And then you had to understand there were gates. And then now you've got all these people that are at the WeWorks in the world and the, you know, galvanizes and everywhere who don't even understand that there's gates. And so right now you have to be a physicist to use one of these machines, you know, in my opinion, or at least have an incredibly heavy knowledge in physics. And we're trying to help take it from that to that next level to where, like, okay, you have to respect and have understanding for the physics, but you have to use it for an enterprise purpose and get an enterprise result, right? So we have a software that's fast time to value, gives you an enterprise result, and it's like, okay, now the enterprise will invest more in that. And guess what? They're not going to invest that money with us, and not us alone. They're going to do it with a variety of hardware vendors and a variety of consultants and a variety of software vendors. And, you know, our goal isn't to, you know, come in and dominate the quantum space or any of the, you know, normal startup attitudes you have. It's like, look, we're going to do fine making a kick-ass business, writing enterprise software that brings a lot of light onto this amazing field and the incredible work that so many people are doing.
So, I mean, what's the biggest hurdle that you see when you talk to these people? I mean, certainly from my perspective, when we talk about quantum algorithms and why quantum computers have their power and, you know, how you explain this new quantum computing paradigm to people who have worked in the classical world forever, the problem is we don't really know. So how do you approach these other people and how do you design around it? I mean, that's, you know, the nature of a quantum Fourier transform is not something that's easily communicated.
No, it's not. And if you take something like Shor's algorithm, right? So here's what we do. You know, let me back up and answer your question directly first. So we solved, Simon, for that problem. We nailed it. Mm-hmm. And that is a book called Quantum Computing for Babies.
Don't which get me started on Fairy.
Which seems – no, I co-wrote that with him.
Yes, I know.
And so look, so but the whole point is what we've tried to do is lower – when you talk about – when I went out and I talked to quantum companies that are in the space. And by the way, what an amazing community we have. I've been in 6 or 7 communities throughout the 25-plus years of my career. This is my favorite one ever. I mean, there's literally – everyone's friendly with everybody. They'll talk to everybody. We know some people talk shit here and there. But, I mean, this is a bunch of people who are doing this because they love it and they're passionate about it, which is where we're coming from. And it's exciting. But what we've looked at is when I talk to them and they talk about the CIOs, the problem, or we talk about – we've even been giving other startups advice on, like, how they can deal with that. We've sent Fortune 500 companies to other startups and been like, look, when you talk to CIO – here's the deal. Don't talk about physics because he's not a physicist, you know. You don't want to make the CIO at the company feel dumb, right? I mean, that is a, you know, they're shut out of the conversation immediately. But when it comes to, like, what can it do, we go into it with eyes wide open, full of wonder. We don't know. Here's the things we do know that are factual. Here's the things that people are positing. And then here's what we think the future looks like. But here's what we do know. I believe wholeheartedly, after 5 years or so of looking into this and now, you know, fully investing all of my time and effort and energy and passion into it, I believe that quantum computing will change computing more in the next 10 years than computing has changed in the last 100. I do think that there is a shift. I think that this is one of many exotic computing platforms that will come in the next 20, 30 years, but I think this is the one that has legs. And I think that if you're in an enterprise, you have to be thinking not myopically quarter to quarter, but you have to be thinking about the things that could disenfranchise you, the things that could come up. I mean, if I would have told you back in the Michael Lewis, you know, Flash Boys days that, hey, somebody's going to take a T1 line and drag it straight to the finance exchange and all of a sudden they're going to steal billions of dollars, you would have been like, that sounds ridiculous. What would a T1 line do to that, right? Well, I mean, what do you think quantum computing is going to do for stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. So to go back to your quantum Fourier transform, you know, the way we approach it is quantum computers aren't going to replace your data center. They're a cloud processor. They're a coprocessor. They look like the next evolution of a GPU in some ways, not in all ways. And so you take something like Shor's algorithm, right? And you're like, okay, step one, make sure it's an odd, you know, check that it's a product of two coprimes in step two, make sure it's a random number, you know, you pull and check that it's not a factor. Okay, well, those all could be done by a classical computer really quickly. It'd almost be a waste of time to do them in quantum. But yeah, you get to order finding where you're like, order find R of X, you know, K mod N. It's like, well, that's the non-deterministic quantum magic, right? You know, and the number of qubits affects the precision and all that good stuff. But it's like, okay, you know, that's where you can use that as a good example of the enterprise and say, look, these are things you can do. And then there's this one step that you just can't do. And this may be an opportunity for you to do it. And here's how it can apply in a variety of spaces, you know, finance, pharma, energy, things like that, and aerospace. And you go in and you give them some solid examples. And that's why we're trying to create something that is very easy for people to get into. But before we even think about selling a product to anyone, and I mean, we've got investors and they'll all expect us to do that and they will hate this part of the podcast. We have to get people educated up on what it is, what it isn't, in a practical, pragmatic way to where a CIO can say, okay, you know what? I'm going to take a couple $100,000, $500,000, a couple $1 million at the right point or whatever, and I'm going to invest it in doing some experiments. I'm going to go work with Simon. I'm going to use Worley's platform. I'm running on a Rigetti or whatever the case may be, and I'm going to see if we can prove out some of these things that we're talking about, right? I mean, because that's the first step for enterprise. I mean, I go back to, you know, the first time I got into enterprise software, I was like, man, we are going to kill it. And we're already at Tivoli Systems. It was owning the enterprise. We already had customers. They already had budget. They're just going to buy whatever. And it was like, this is amazing. You're like, hey, how's that deployment going? It's like, ooh, we've almost made it through the compliance phase. You know, like 9 months later, you know, your software was working. And the moment they started it up, but guess what? There were 50 other things in the chain. And they all affected it. And it was like, oh, it didn't work. You know, what did you guys sell us? So it's like it can be very complicated. And we want to help build the community. We want to bridge the gap on the understanding for the CIO and the developers and kind of lower the barrier to entry. And then we want to be able to provide small, demonstrable things. This isn't going to be, you know, the thing I hate is when I read an article that says quantum computing will kill all blockchain or Bitcoin or encryption or whatever the case it was. And it was like, you know, I have CIOs ask me that all the time. We're going to be in a room of 200 CIOs on Monday. I guarantee you one of those questions will be, well, isn't it going to break all of the encryption? It's like, well, do you remember the Enigma machine? That was state of the art at the time. And then not state of the art, right?
Well, completely. I mean, it's going to take a little while before it starts breaking encryption. But
here's the point, Simon. The point is, let's say that theoretically I had whatever, a million qubit computer, and it could break the RSA. Okay, so you make the key length, you know, 20 times as long, 5 times as long, whatever. And now I really need a 3 million, and it takes us, you know, another 3 years to get there. I mean, security is a intertwining dance of threat and remediation and has been for its history. And I think those articles that say things like, you know, oh, it's a quantum apocalypse and this and that, and they do more harm for our industry and for the people trying to work in this on a daily basis than they do good, right? I mean, that's the things that take us closer to that quantum winter that I'm worried about and further away from people looking at practical algorithms and applications.
Well, I mean, getting back to sort of what you're offering, I mean, you may not be able to talk about it in a huge amount of detail, but the way you're talking is, you know, you are offering software, right? You are developing software itself.
That is correct. And by the way, we will be announcing when we release it a free version. So researchers and everybody can use a bunch of the stuff we've built for free.
Places like Rigetti and places like IBM and Google and Microsoft, to a certain extent, they really are trying very, very hard to generate somewhat of an open source kind of community around quantum. So in the case of something like what you're up to, I mean, how does that fit in? Obviously, you know, you're a startup, you're a business, you have to make money somehow.
Wait, we have to make money?
Well, that's what I'm told.
Oh, shit. we are fucked. But no.
I've heard a rumor.
On a serious note, look, we have some command line tools that will be coming out soon that are all open source. We have some things for people to do diagrams that are all hosted for free. We absolutely think you have to have a set of things that help people get into this, that help people learn about it, that help people move about it. One of the projects we'll be launching in October is quantum.org. I'm a 2018 Eisenhower Fellow. My quantum is my focus for that fellowship. And we're going to create quantum.org as a completely free, unbiased, built by a bunch of great people resource on where are the tools and where's the open source and who are the companies and where's the funding and where's all of that information so that there's somewhere people can go and get that. Because I appreciate that Microsoft released Q-Sharp very much. But releasing Q-Sharp is kind of like putting the cart before the horse in some ways. Like IBM's like 80 quadrillion experiences, you know, experiments have been run on our Q experience. And it's like, that's great. I would rather see these are the three things people did that they nailed that are amazing that everybody should be doing. But we don't see that.
Right.
Right? And we see Q-Sharp as a language. They don't have a topological computer. So it's like, okay, well, that's cool. You know, and everybody's trying to build communities in kind of an adjunct way. And that's why when we looked at what Microsoft's doing, we looked at what Google's doing with Circ, when we looked at what IBM's doing, we decided the best way to start building community was to build communities that weren't based around us. To go to Stack Overflow, where all the developers are, and build the QA stuff where people could have a conversation that's not dominated by StrangeWorks, that's not managed by StrangeWorks, it's not influenced by StrangeWorks. To build things like quantum.org where, you know, we could invite a bunch of other smart people, much smarter than us in some ways, to build some things. And with our software, we're taking the same approach, right? We'll have some things that we put up on our GitHub page. We'll have some things that we host for free. When the product comes out, there'll be two versions. There's a free version and an enterprise version, right? And if you're a researcher, somebody, and you want to use it, go for it. And you know, all I would ask in return is I would love people when they start using the product to beat it up and just be brutally honest and be like, I don't like it. It doesn't do these five things, and we'll build those for you. You know what I mean? But I think, you know, there's such a big pie and so few people trying to eat it that it's like, while a lot of startups have these really big grandiose goals and, you know, they're going to be billions of dollars and this and that, it's like, you know, this is paralleled to AI. This is paralleled to AR. I mean, I worked in Apple with Peter Hadi, who did QuickTime and QuickTime VR. And I saw my first AR headset, which was from 1961 in 1993. And I co-founded the augmented reality world and a bunch of stuff just because I was like, this will never go anywhere. And it's like, if we're not careful in quantum, we end up being one of those things where people are like, oh, yeah, it's going to be great one day. And it's like, wow, it's 25 years later. And, you know, Pokemon Go was a fad. And Facebook bought Oculus and hasn't really done anything with it. It's like, you know, Magic Leap has raised billions of dollars. And like, guess what? Does the same thing Oculus does. You could put stuff in front of your face. And it's like, we need to not be that where we're like, guess what? You could run an algorithm faster, maybe, potentially. And the answer's probably right most of the time. But you might have to run the experiment a few times. Like, we can't be those people.
Sure,
like,
sure.
We can't. And so, you know, it's like, yeah, we believe in free tools. We believe in open source. We'll have a lot of that coming out. I mean, remember, we launched in March. So give us a chance to write some stuff to give away before we give it away.
No. You don't get that kind of luxury. I mean, March. That's nearly a quarter of a PhD done. You got to get on.
All right, Then I tell you what I'm going to do, Simon. You're going to call me out. I'm going to call you out. I tell you what. We'll build something useful to community. I don't have a plan for this, by the way, just FYI. This is complete.
None of us have any plans.
But I will build something useful for the community, and I will give it away, and I will do it by Halloween. How's that? There's a commitment.
Well, I mean, I'm definitely going to hold you to that.
But you have to talk about it when I do. You have to let everybody know that you
helped me to it. I have no problems talking about it. I'll talk about it if you don't do it too. I'll have a special episode just for, you know, shining a light that a promise was made by Halloween.
That's, you know, people are going to talk about us, Simon. They'll say we're in love. We should be very careful.
That's fine. That's fine. But I mean, obviously
that was the best silence of the lambs I can do. I'm sorry. It was close. I didn't want to do it in the creepy voice. Too much for a first interview.
Well, I mean, it's the quantum community. There's enough creepy voices around.
So you know Helmet. I'm kidding. Shout out to Helmet. I love it. I'll say it.
So, I mean, I was going to ask because, I mean, you were part of the announcement of the IBM Q network a couple of months ago. So, I mean, what's your relationship with that system? I mean, you obviously talked about the squizillion number of experiments that IBM likes talking about has been run on their system. What's the deal with that kind of relationship? Is it software that's supposed to be developed for IBM? Is it advertising for them? Is it running stuff on their systems? I mean, how's all that kind of thing going?
Well, so it's going great. So I'm sure you saw Jeff Wessler, who's like the director of research at Al Maiden, had posted back in April about the collaboration of all of these top startups. And you had Zapata and StrangeWorks and QX Branch and QCware.
Control and Quantum Benchmark. And
love QControl. I love Michael. He's amazing. Cambridge was there too, right? And 1Qubit was there, right? Yep. And so, you know, I think the idea there for IBM was they have a platform, they've got the Bluemix stuff out there available, and they basically are like, look, these startups are startups that are kind of like, you know, whatever selection criteria they use obviously wasn't that good. We were included. I'm just kidding. But
I think they took all the startups at the time.
They did. Trust me. Unfortunately, there's 70 we found worldwide, so they definitely did not. But
70?
There are 70. I'll send you. We'll do some emails after this. But yeah, there are. We're gonna put that when you see quantum.org. I was like, hey, make a section for all the startups. And then the guy who's working on it for me, Jackson, was like, hey, how many do you want on there? I was like, well, put them all on there. And he goes, yeah, I'm at 57. And I was like, what? I was like,
I'm going to have to see that list. I mean, I usually go off the quantum computing report. That's usually pretty comprehensive.
It can't be. It didn't even have me in there. Come on, Simon. If I get one more Google alert for that report, I'm going to absolutely lose my mind. It is every Google quantum search result is that same report. So back to IBM. So basically they were like, look, we got this Q network. They got a bunch of researchers and people doing stuff on it. And what are they doing? We don't know. We need to put a business process around it. And they said, look, we'll go out and we'll partner with these startups, right? Because the Q network launched in what, like October, November, sometime the last part of 2017, right? And so they were like, okay, we see what people are doing. They're doing experiments. Things are going great. Let's see if we can get some of these startups that are funded, that have a bunch of bright minds, to actually do some business stuff on the platform, and start give them some access in the network. You know, so basically we all get some credits and we can have access to the machines and we can get access to the 50 qubit, et cetera, et cetera. And basically enable us to run a bunch of experiments and algorithms on the quantum computers and then get the opportunity to collaborate with IBM researchers and their technical subject matter experts on applications. And I think for IBM, if you look at it from that way, they can't, that was kind of their goal, right? Basically is to get startups to collaborate with their subject matter experts and to collaborate with research on here's application ideas that IBM and the startups involved and everybody could go and try to sell to enterprise, right? And I think that was the main antithesis of why that came into being.
So it's very much on the idea of, look, we really want apps that are possibly runnable and possibly commercializable on, you know, their 20 qubit chip, their 50 qubit chip, maybe their 100, 200 qubit chip if they do it in the next year or so. And it's like, okay, we're going to partner up with you guys. That becomes your job.
Right. You know, yeah, to come up with some of those applications. They can provide the support and everything. They can have these startups go off and take off and make something that could be useful, right? So I think, you know, it's a pretty clear benefit. Microsoft will no doubt follow that, okay? And I think Google will no doubt follow that. And so I think this is a formula you'll see. And I mean, I credit IBM. I mean, you know, to their credit, they have been investing a lot of money in getting everything out and getting everything going and really pushing things in the direction that they're pushing them. And, you know, they deserve credit for that. And Google's CERC release of the Apache 2 license stuff, they deserve credit for that. Microsoft's, you know, Q-Sharp release, you know, they deserve credit for that. I think it's nice to see these large companies trying to collaborate with startups that they historically in the enterprise treat as kind of the enemy and partner with them and do things. And I think that's, again, why I come back to being so excited about this particular venture and this particular community.
Well, I mean, IBM has been doing this before I was even born. They were certainly one of the first corporates involved in quantum computing research. But, I mean, I wanted to ask a little bit more about your interactions with sort of the non-quantum corporate sector or the non-quantum sort of IT sector. Is, you know, what is their opinion of all of this rubbish every time they see, you know, such and such press release and such write-up in Tech Review or whatever media outlet we're talking about? I mean, are they just still utterly baffled by this? That what the F is quantum and I don't get this? Or are they starting to get a fairly good understanding of, you know, what the developmental time frame is? You know, how long before this stuff becomes useful to me? How much is this going to cost me, et cetera, et cetera?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know, but rumor is my upcoming Playgirl spread is going to be all of the quantum goodness, like just done. Like I just nailed it. So, no, look,
the IT... They always say the adult industry are early adopters.
The IT guys are more than you know, but the idea... Foreshadowing? No, the idea is, you know, basically, I think that they're a little frustrated by it. You have an article come out in the morning... It says it's going to destroy all your encryption, and now your CIO or your dev manager is like, what is this quantum thing? How are we going to handle this? Why are we mitigating this risk? And then you have an article that comes out later that says, oh, it won't happen for 30 years. And then by the evening, there's an article that says, oh, yeah, by the way, it's not going to kill encryption. It's going to totally revolutionize finance or cure cancer or whatever. So, I mean, I think there's understandably a lot of frustration in the people I talk to that are in the trenches doing the work, the people that would actually have to integrate these with their enterprise systems, people that would actually have to go up and do that grunt work. I think it's very frustrating. And I think, by the way, that part of that frustration obviously creates a tremendous consulting opportunity for a lot of people. And, you know, that's awesome. That's not us. We're software guys. Right. we don't actually want to deal with customers or anything like that. We just, you know, you sign up on the web and then we take your money. And, you know, like
so
you said.
So basically the entire quantum community is doing an absolutely shitty job at this point trying to explain to not quantum people what the hell this stuff is.
No, we're not managing the job. No, absolutely not. Everybody I talk to in the quantum community is doing great. However... We're not the ones communicating those IT people. The reporters for Verge and Wired and people and all of these different crazy places that have talked about quantum, they are talking to them, and we're not doing enough to get in front of them and to do education for them and to provide websites they can go to and pull quotes from and pull sources from and pull data from. And so therefore, all of the blogs, all of the reporting you see on it, a lot of it is the Wild Wild West. That's not the fault of the community. However, it is something that we as a community can band together and change.
So is this something that you're hoping quantum.org is going to be a forum to allow somewhat of control of the narrative?
It is the inspiration for that, but not a control of the narrative, just a gentle influence of the narrative by the right people in our community, which are at almost all of the companies we've mentioned and more, okay? To where somebody comes in and they say, I'm writing an article about how quantum computing will destroy encryption in 2 years. And we go, well, that's awesome. Let us introduce you to a quantum expert and an encryption expert. so they can kind of reset your expectations on that, right? Or, you know, quantum computing is going to take over the enterprise, and it's like, okay, well, what are the applications? Because if you know, there's a lot of us in the quantum computing community that would also like to know, right? You should tell us. I think that's the, you know, I mean, this is, look, in an early nascent industry, right, we have to remember that we'll always be in one of two phases. We'll be struggling, or we'll all be out of business. The industry will die. There'll be a quantum winter. And so we have to pull together, contribute to things like quantum.org or whatever, the wiki pages. Who cares? You don't have to do it with me. Go do it yourself, right? But so that there are places that when people go and they Google and they search, they can find actual things that are verifiable facts, that are realistic, that set expectations. Whenever I have sent somebody to Andrew at 1Qubit and Landon, or sent somebody to Will Zine, or sent somebody anywhere, they have never failed to come out of that conversation and say, oh, that was really useful. Now I get it. The community understands this. We're living it every day. But there's a huge delta between where we're at and where the people in the trenches are at. And it's filled with everybody from bloggers to reporters to, you know, people writing reports and trying to get us to pay to be in them and get other people to pay to read them. And, you know, and there's a lot of fear and uncertainty and doubt in that layer in between. And it's like the only way that gets better is if we say, you know what, I don't have the time to do yet another thing this week, or write a blog post about this topic, or do this or do that. But I'm going to take the time to do it because it's not just affecting me. It's affecting everybody in this space.
So do you think that especially amongst the sort of the startup community that exists, or even the pre-established corporates that exist in the quantum space, that there really is sort of a responsibility, or at least a need, for there being an outreach element of these things? Or do you think the universities can do a good job of that?
I think we all have to be involved in that. I think there is a responsibility to anyone who is trying to say, I'm building a business in quantum that's consulting. I'm building a software company. I'm building a hardware platform, whatever. I think that that comes with a responsibility of like, okay, well, we all have to kind of work together and educate not just the market. You know, it can't just be about you finding a product market fit to get your next round. Right? It has to be about you educating all the people in the market, and also making sure that the hype cycle is tempered with some reality. Because otherwise what will happen is the CIO only sees the articles that hype it up. Then we actually work with somebody, you know, you and I go and we work together with customer X, and we work with IT guy Z, and Z says, this is amazing, I want to do it. And it goes up the chain. The CIO is like, I don't know, I'm seeing a lot of confusing information on this. It really just seems like now's not the time. Let's take a wait and see attitude. And then nothing happens. Right? I mean, we have to deliver software, you know, and this is speaking only from a StrangeWorks viewpoint, only from our little niche, which is a very small niche of this entire industry. Software has one purpose, and that is to eliminate complexity. Not to transfer it, not to put a blanket over it, but to eliminate complexity. And that's what we're trying to do. And if we lose focus of that, and we don't do that, then we'll be dead as a business. But it's as important that we help eliminate the complexity of the people understanding it, the access to information, et cetera, as it is the software we're building. I mean, it is just as important, a vital component of everything we're doing every day. And I'll be blunt, we're not doing enough, and we're trying to do more. We have, you know, 6 or 8 projects between now and July of next year, and we're working very hard to do them, you know, some tools, some learning, some, you know, the quantum.org thing. But, you know, if I could, you know, I would have them all out there today, because I'm very worried about the fear and uncertainty and doubt that's created by the unnecessary hype cycle. Look, you don't have to hype quantum. I mean, think about this. You're using quantum physics to build a fucking computer. It just doesn't get more exciting. We don't need to hype that. I mean, that's
everything needs to be hyped. If we were building a warp drive, it would still be hyped.
Simon, the only thing that needs, there's only two things that need to be hyped, okay? All right, and that is Arby's, which is great, and your podcast. That's it. Outside of that, no hype.
I haven't had the pleasure of eating at Arby's yet.
Well, when you come to visit us in Austin, which I hope you will, because eventually you'll do video, we'll do a live video, we will have Arby's cater that. they don't do that, but we'll have Jackson go get some Arby's and bring it back.
Yeah, so I mean, you were talking, okay, you've got six or so products running. So sort of two questions. First of all, I'm interested to know, I mean, how big's the team now? How many guys have you got basically working on this stuff?
So look, we're going very slow. So it's a core team that I've worked with together over two or three startups already under our belts. This is our third outing together at a minimum for most of us. You've got seven people. We've got some contractors and people we're testing out that are friends and people we've worked with before. We'll probably go to 13 or 20, somewhere in that range. And I can't tell you. I mean, anybody who's like, we'll be 15 people in June. I'm just like, well, you don't know anything about running a startup. Yeah, because, yeah. You know, you just don't know. But, you know, we'll be somewhere around 20. The thing is, though, you know, our approach to development is different. At Apple, everything when I worked at Apple was done in a tiger team. So you're talking about seven people, maybe nine, right?
Right.
You don't have too many cooks in the kitchen when you're building the bones and the structure and the architecture and the infrastructure of what's going to be an actual platform you want to be able to just quickly add things onto. And we're kind of following, you know, a mix of the Apple development approach that we all learned when we were there and the IBM development approach. So there's a little bit of that research kind of far looking, here's all the dreamy stuff we want to do. And then there's a little bit more practical approach of like, look, you know, we don't need, you know, 16 people giving their opinions on how people log in. We think that's probably already pretty well defined by the enterprise, like very well defined, right? So you know, that's kind of what we look like and what we're doing. And, you know, if there's any quantum computer scientists out there listening that are looking for a job, reach out to me, because I'm definitely still, I mean, I've interviewed several, but I haven't found the person I like yet. You know, and that's probably one of the next hires. And then,
I was going to ask whether or not your team was going to, you know, be blessed with a quantum person.
I mean, well, we have physicists, we have other people, but, you know, there's a, what I think you see most startups doing, I don't think this is a big secret, is you have your physicist and your kind of quantum mechanics experts, and you have your software developers, and there's kind of this quantum software developer unicorn person that has kind of emerged at a bunch of companies that kind of is the go-between sort of in some ways. And, you know, we have been lucky enough to not need that, but I mean, I sure would like one, not necessarily for our internal development, but for having that conversation with those people we talked about in the trenches, right? I think that could be very useful and very additive to what we already have when we come into a meeting, kind of what we bring to the table. So, you know, it's been hard to find one. I mean, it's easy to find one that's like, I write code and I'm a physics expert. And you're like, that's amazing. And then you put them in front of a customer and they don't talk, or you put them in front of a customer and they're like, you know, like, ah, physics, you know.
Blah. Yeah, well, I mean, you're dealing with physicists, dude. I mean, that's going to be a tough hurdle to get over.
Mitt Kapsheimer has got to be one of the smoothest players in the universe.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a unicorn.
S-M-O-O-T-H, smooth.
Yeah, that's a unicorn.
Can you hear the sarcasm in my voice? Will he be able to pick up the sarcasm in the podcast, you think?
Yeah, well, you know, Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory is closer to home.
Maybe you could add an echo effect where I go, it's like, helmet, catch grabber! And then it could be like, smooth, 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 smooth. That would be amazing.
Yeah, well, again, I told you, this is a low production quality effort.
Well, yeah, I got a music studio at home. Send me the audio file.
I'll send you the audio file because I'm not doing it.
I'll just dub that in for you.
But I mean, you said you used to be part of Apple. I mean, what are they doing? They're a $1 trillion company. I mean, 0.01% of their net value. We get this done tomorrow.
So, you know, great question. Here's what they're doing. I'm not sure if they're making more money or counting the money, or maybe they have a way to like count it as they make it or something, but I'm pretty sure it has to do with money. You know, Apple's a great company. I loved working there. I would love to work there again at some point in the future, but come on, man. Tim Cook, who everybody doubted, you know, I worked for Steve Jobs twice in my career. Tim Cook comes in, everybody's like, he's no Steve. It's like, well, I'll tell you what he is. He's an operational mastermind, because you're buying a new iPhone in about a month, maybe two, and there'll be a whole bunch of new cables with it and everything. It's like they secretly bought back, not secretly, I mean, people knew it, but I mean, very stealthily, bought back 25% of all of their outstanding stock over the last 5 years. Like,
yeah,
that's unheard of. They're sitting on somewhere in the neighborhood, and I'll plus or minus, you know, some amount, $300 billion in cash and short-term assets. So, you know,
again,
I mean,
why are they not in this game? I mean, you know.
Listen, if Apple is listening, Simon and I would like $1 billion investment for our new quantum startup. No.
$1 billion investment. Geez, we'd get a lot done with that kind of money.
I mean, look, the thing is, Apple is doing Apple. I mean, look, you know, they're not a quantum company. That's not saying they couldn't be. That's not saying that AI from Siri couldn't use it. It's not saying that their mythical car project that, you know, is real in Verge one day and not real in Engadget the other day couldn't use it for, you know, autonomous optimization of autonomous vehicle trafficking or, you know. But, you know, there's – look, think of how much – look at the U.S. government, man. China put $10 billion into a 92-hectare facility for quantum information science. Mm-hmm. We have a bill in front of the Senate that's like, hey, we'd like $60 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was done by Michael at QX Branch, and credit to him for doing it. But it's like, Apple, what about just some of the governments? What about just some of the universities building programs to teach people more quantum information science, more of the kind of crossover between the physics and the computer science? There's so much more. You know, it's like, yeah, I'd love to see a company with a lot of money throw that kind of investment around. And by the way, there is one. There's actually three, right? It's called IBM and Google and Microsoft. I mean, IBM is putting a lot of money into this, and so are the other two. And so I think we have the big companies doing it. I think we need more university stuff. I think we need, you know, more government stuff.
Even counting Alibaba and Baidu in this.
We're not even, I mean, why? I mean, Baidu, you know, Alibaba, go check out their, you know, quantum site that's like, send us an email, it's coming soon. Like, it probably is. Like, they're putting a lot of investment and effort into this. So I think, you know, it's nice to romanticize, you know, like Apple's got all of the money in the world, because ironically, they do. Like, that is a lot of money. It's like, I don't worry about Apple getting involved in it. I worry about all the people that, like, all of the governments are worried about it. You know, it's some issue of national security or this or that, which, by the way, is kind of a hoax, because if you look at the authorships of paper on quantum computers by nationality, right, and you look at like Canada, Japan, Britain, Germany, China, and the USA, there's like so much crosstalk of researchers from everywhere. You know what I mean? But, you know, let's say if it is that important, why don't we start funding some, you know, you don't have to fund startups. You don't have to make government handouts for companies that don't know how to operate. But what about universities? What about educational resources? What about, like, there's so much stuff that could be done in that area. And by the way, University of Waterloo, you know, University of New South Wales, TU Delft, Oxford, Tokyo Institute, you know, MIT, Yale, all these, you know, Harvard, Berkeley. We know there are a bunch of universities everywhere that are doing cool stuff, but it's like, I'm sure they wouldn't mind an extra boost of some extra funds for some grad students or some professors, some research.
Well, we're certainly in the middle over here in Sydney trying to get this Sydney Quantum Academy up and running, but you know, it's always a tough sell.
But that's a great example, right? Like, why isn't the Australian government doing more to help that? You know, and I'm not trying to pick on any particular government. I'm just saying, like, the Apple thing is a great question. I say, well, yeah, before we, you know, get to Apple, what about all the other people who are in a position to help right now? And for whatever reason are either incapable of helping or don't have the interest or whatever. I think there's a lot of organizations and a lot of governments that talk a little bit out of both sides of their mouth, in that, like, this is super important to the future. It's like, right, but are you actually going to invest in it at all? Are you going to do anything with it? You know, it can't be the thing that's going to change your world, but also, you know, we don't want to touch it. Like, I mean, it's kind of, one of those has to be not true. Either you have to be involved or want to get involved, or it's just not that that earth-shattering.
Cool. Well, I mean, we're getting close to an hour now. That's actually flown by. So I suppose we'll try and wrap it up now. But as I usually sort of let my guests do, first of all, is there anything you need to plug, anything you want to talk about that's coming up with Strange Works, anything you want to advertise? But also, just to close out, just to get your thoughts on, you know, where you think things are going to go in the next 5 years? And more importantly, where do you hope things are going to go in the next 5 years?
So look, I'll make the plug quick. It's really simple. Only you can set you free, man. I mean, this is not about some startup that comes in and takes over the world. Go join the Stack Overflow community. Beat us up when quantum.org comes out. Tell us what's wrong with it, what it's missing. If you think there's a tool that nobody's willing to write in open source, it needs to be out there. Send us an email. We'll tell you, like, hell no, we can't do that. Or, you know, maybe we'll do it. Like, I mean, there's no plug. If there was a plug, it'd be like, buy more quantum computing for babies, because it is approaching, much to the dismay of professors everywhere, the best-selling book on quantum computing. And I did, at a conference recently, very much upset somebody who called me out, which, by the way, was a horrible thing to do. And they said, I have a PhD, and I've been doing this, and I'm a professor, and that, and that's what makes me an expert in quantum computing. And you're a software hacker who got out of high school, right? Like, what makes you an expert? And I said, don't sell yourself short. You also wrote that book and those papers and all. I was like, that book probably could be credited as something. I go, I also wrote a book, and I gently glided the book out from underneath my chair, said, it's called Quantum Computing for Babies. And then I signed him a copy on stage. If looks could kill, like, I would be a dead man. But
we don't need to give Ferry a bigger head than he already has.
Oh yeah, you know what? He's awesome. I mean, you know, I didn't realize how big it was. You know, the way we met to work on the book, quick side note, is I sent him a photo of my kid. I'm like, probably nobody appreciates this guy's work. There's a photo of my kid with your book. And I'm sure Chris was like, yeah, I've never received 100 million of those before. But back to your closing and kind of bringing the podcast to a close on this, what does the next 5 years look like? I am very optimistic that we will have a multiple hundred qubit computer. I know Rigetti put their plan out for 128, and there's different feedback on that. But I think, you know, in 5 years, you're probably looking at 200 to 300. I think we're going to have a lot. The work being done down there by Michael at Control Q, I'm a huge fan of Michael's. I think we're going to have people who fix the quantum error correction. And I think when they do, then you're going to see a spike in the number of qubits. I think that happens in 5 years. I think you're going to see the first early adopters, probably hedge funds and financial, probably biotech, in the pharma industry, users who use it and prove that there's an advantage that starts getting a bunch of other people excited and involved. And I think you're going to see a lot of questionable times in the next 5 years. I think you'll see countries like the United States reach a point where, well, China has a lot of quantum, and quantum could do encryption, and quantum encryption, and quantum metrology, and you might see some things where quantum gets, you know, threatened to be treated like something like encryption is, right? Where it's a munition and it's a non-exportable. You might see various research packs. I think you'll see a lot. You either see that, or we'll be in a quantum winter. And then, you know, I'll see you again in 2025.
Oh, don't say that out loud.
I know, but I have to say it. You know why? Because
you can't. I'm literally useless in everything else, so don't say that.
But here's a thing. Can you code? Because, you know, we can just, like, we talk.
No,
after.
I can't code to save my life.
Uh oh. Well, no, but seriously, the situation is, again, we are in a position to all pull together, to work together, knowing that sometimes I'm going to win, sometimes you're going to win, but overall we'll all be lifted by this rising tide, or we'll fragment and fracture the community, and there'll be all this hype, and that, you know, I'm not great at math, but I can tell you what the math on that is. It's quantum winter, and I don't want to see that. So if I can do anything to help anybody to make the next 5 years look like what I'm hoping, which is a several hundred qubit machine, adoption in farm and finance at a minimum of some really provable things that kind of start a watershed event, and then hopefully some real development of software, some real interest from the governments and the people providing funding to startups, et cetera, you know, I'll help anybody. I mean, if somebody's got a quantum startup and they need to meet funding resources, I'll introduce them. I don't care. I think we all need to have the attitude of our products compete on who we are and what we've built. And sometimes that'll mean we win, and sometimes it'll mean we lose. But if we don't pull together, we will push this date of kind of quantum coming into, you know, it's dawn in the enterprise out further than any of us will be able to fund.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, mate. Let's hope things do go well over the next 5 years. But in any case, we've just hit an hour, so I think we'll close it out now. But that was a great conversation. I mean, time really flew by. So, Whirly, thanks again, and best of luck with things in Austin.
Thanks so much, man. Simon, I hope you stay in touch. And don't forget, you've got to hold me to turning out something that's useful to community by October.
By Halloween, right? I've already set the calendar.
All right, I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, mate.